Most people think of themselves as wise. At least they think of themselves as wise as they compare themselves to somebody they think is foolish. We all know somebody, well, a neighbor, or maybe a co-worker, maybe a family member, who is really the foolish person, but as compared to them, we generally think of ourselves as wise. That being the case, I'm going to make an assumption today. I'm going to assume that I'm talking to wise people. Is that a good idea? Well, we're going to make that assumption. If that's the case, Solomon has something to say to you. There is a portion in the book of Ecclesiastes where it seems to me he's saying, in essence, if you are wise, here are some things you need to know. So, will you turn with me to Ecclesiastes chapter 9, where Solomon talks to the wise? I'm going to begin reading at verse 13. He says, "This wisdom I have seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with a few men in it. And a great king came against it, besieged it, and built great snares around it. Now there was found in it a poor, wise man. And he, by his wisdom, delivered the city. Yet no one remembered that same poor man. Then I said, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. The words of the wise, spoken quickly, should be heard, rather than the shout of a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Dead flies putrefy the perfume's ointment, and cause it to give a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor." The heart of this passage is a parable, which I will explain in a minute. It seems to me that Solomon uses that parable to teach some things about wisdom. One of those things is positive. And then there are several things about wisdom that are negative, at least to the one who has the wisdom, and those negative things you really need to know, as well as the positive thing he has to say about wisdom. So with that in mind, let's look at the positive and the negative things you need to know about wisdom. Verse 13, Solomon says, "This wisdom that he's been talking about, I have seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me." Now, as I have explained before, as we've gone through the book of Ecclesiastes, that little phrase, under the sun, means nothing more than on the earth. Some try to make more out of it than is necessary, but I think just basically the idea is, this is what I've seen on the earth. I've seen wisdom. And you know what? It is great. Now, later in the passage, he says in verse 16, wisdom is better than strength. And he says in verse 18, wisdom is better than the weapons of war. So the first thing you need to know about wisdom, and this is the positive thing, is that it's great. As a matter of fact, you could argue that it's superior to strength, and by that I mean military strength. That there are situations where you're better off having wisdom than having a whole army backing you up. Now, that's his point. It's a very positive point. There's benefits to wisdom. It's great. It's stronger. It's better than wisdom. And I'm sorry, than strength. But what he does next is he gives a little parable. And this parable illustrates perfectly what he just said. Look at verse 14. "There was a little city with a few men in it, And a great king came against it, besieged it, and built a great snares around it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. Now that's the parable. It's real simple. There's this little bitty town. Doesn't have very many people in it. Therefore, it couldn't have a big army. Couldn't defend itself. Matter of fact, it says very specifically, it was a little city and there were few men in it. So it was a defenseless, helpless little city. And a great king, implying that unlike that little bitty helpless city, this king had a great army. And for some reason not explained, he decided to conquer the city. So he besieged it, laid traps all around it. So that poor, helpless, defenseless city didn't have much hope standing up against a great army of a great king. But Solomon says, there was found in it a poor, wise man. Now he's poor, so he doesn't have wealth. He's poor. He doesn't have an army. He's poor. He doesn't have anything that's going to come up against a king and a whole host of military might, but he's wise. And verse 15 says, by his wisdom, he delivered the city. Wow. Solomon is saying, wisdom is great. That's verse 13. Wisdom is better than strength. That's verse 16. Wisdom is better than weapons of war. That's verse 18. So the single positive point he makes about wisdom in this passage is that it's great and it's superior to strength, and even if you want to carry it that far, military strength. There's great advantages to having wisdom. I have a pastor friend, and he and I talk on the phone a lot. He's in another state. And we talked this week, and he said, hey, what are you preaching on Sunday? And I tell him what I'm preaching on, and he tells me what he's preaching on. And he said, I have a question. How did Solomon get so much wisdom? My immediate response was, well, you know, the Lord gave it to him. I mean, you remember, he asked for wisdom. Remember that? So the Lord gave it to him. And then this fellow said to me, but I'm sure he had wise counselors around him, right? That he collected wise people around him. And all of a sudden, I thought of this passage. I said, wait a minute. I don't know where Solomon got all his wisdom. I assume he gave it to the Lord. I think the Bible teaches that. But I think there's one case where I know where he got it. He got it from David. Let me tell you a story. We're told in 2 Samuel that there was a man that was against David, Sheba. And he retreated to a little city and, if I can use the word, harassed Israel. So David wanted to eliminate this fellow. So he commissioned a whole army to go down and, if necessary, destroy that city to capture that one guy. So that happened. Joab went down, surrounded the town, and they were toast, as we would say today. Now, in the story recorded in 2 Samuel, it wasn't a wise man, it was a wise woman who went out to talk to Joab and said, now look, what's your beef? We're people of peace. What's your problem here? What is it you want? And he said, well, David wants that one guy, Sheba. She said, got it. She goes back into town and she says, I got this figured out. Give him this fellow Sheba and we won't have any more problems. And that is exactly what they did. That's all they wanted. And the city was spared. Do you suspect that that's where Solomon may have gotten this idea at least? I think that's very possible, which leads me to say, be a wise father to have a wise son. Now, we know this very kind of thing happened in 2 Samuel chapter 20. It also happened in other places. Matter of fact, most of us aren't up on our ancient history. That's not a subject that we spend a lot of time thinking about. But some people have said one of the greatest battles in all of history took place in ancient Greece when the Persians came against Athens. Athens won against a superior force by wisdom, if you will. And there are other cases as well. So this is not a far-fetched idea. But here is the point. Wisdom is better than strength. So let me ask you a question. If you had to choose wisdom or strength, which one would you choose? Now, I suspect the people listening to me right now would say wisdom, right? I mean, after all, I'm standing in a pulpit with a Bible open, preaching on wisdom. What are you going to say, right? Besides, you've lived long enough to know you need wisdom, right? I suspect some young people might say, I don't know, I'd take strength. I'll get wisdom later. You know. Well, Solomon is simply saying, if you had to choose, choose wisdom over great, even military power. Choose wisdom, because wisdom can serve you better than a whole army with military weapons. So, as will become evident as I continue, let me suggest this. You should seek wisdom, and you should speak wisdom. Earlier in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon said, there is a time to speak. And the time to speak is when you have wisdom and other people need it. If the city is surrounded and you can figure out how to prevent the city from being conquered, by all means, go talk to the man who's about to destroy the city. Right? So if you know somebody who needs some of your wisdom, don't hesitate to give it to them. Now, James has some things to say about that. In James chapter 3, he says, make sure you are practicing the wisdom before you share it, but by all means, seek it, speak it, and share it. Wisdom has great advantages, can get you out of all kinds of problems. So if you have some of it, spread it around. Now, I said this passage tells us one positive thing about wisdom and several negative things about wisdom. Let me give you three negative things about wisdom. Look at the end of verse 15. Yet no one remembered that same poor man. Wow. He saved the city. And nobody remembered that poor man. He was a hero, but nobody remembered that same poor man. He was, I submit to you, quickly forgotten, not recognized. Matter of fact, some have suggested the little word remember here might imply there was some kind of a reward. He wasn't rewarded. But for sure, the point is, he wasn't remembered. If a man saved the city, and you were on the city council, what would you suggest we do? Would you suggest we at least recognize him? Maybe somehow fix it so that he's remembered? Maybe we give him a plaque? Maybe name a street after him? Or erect a statue with him and put a plaque at the bottom of it so next generation can come and see the statue and read and remember that he saved the city. Perhaps somebody would write a book. Oh, tell his story. And if that happened, Hollywood would pick it up and make a movie, and he would become known in the city, which he should have done. But No one remembered that poor man. If you have wisdom, you need to know this. You need to share your wisdom, but you need to remember that you may be soon forgotten after that. They will forget what you did. So just know that. That even when that's done, even when good is done, great good, people will eventually forget you. People have short memories. All they want to know is, what have you done for me lately? Now, as you know, I've been going through the book of Ecclesiastes. Last Sunday at our potluck, Mike Bloodworth said to me, I've got a great illustration for you. Now, that's based on some things he heard in the book of Ecclesiastes. And I listened to what he had to say, and I said, Mike, that is a great illustration. Why didn't I think of that? It had to do with the walk of fame in Hollywood. I hadn't thought about that in a long time, so I went and did a little digging. By the way, let me ask you a question. How many of you know about the walk of fame in Hollywood? Who doesn't know about the walk of fame in Hollywood? Let me ask you this. When was that started? Have any idea? I'd have said, you know, the 20s, 30s, 40s. Who was the first person to ever be given a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame? And the other thing I wondered is, how many stars are there? So I did a little digging. Here's what I found out. The first star was given to Joanne Woodward. And it was placed on February the 9th, and this surprised me, 1960. And they designated 25 spaces for stars. And as far as I could determine, as of now, they filled up just shy of 2,400. They've extended the limits, by the way, but that's based on what I dug up. But here's what Mike said. This is the point. He said, you know, if you walk down the Walk of Fame and you see names, there are some of those names that everybody would recognize. But if you keep walking, there are names that some young people wouldn't recognize. He said, now being older, I would, you know, but they wouldn't because they don't know these people. And if you keep walking, he said, you'll bump into names. And he said, I see names I don't recognize. And that's why that's such a great illustration. You mean to tell me that somebody in the entertainment world was so outstanding, they got a star in the Walk of Fame, and nobody knows their name? Wow. That's what Solomon says you need to know. Don't expect people to remember your name. Give them wisdom anyway. Don't expect people to give you credit for the wisdom. Give it to them anyway. Share your wisdom. Save the city, knowing that you may be forgotten. Harry Truman said, it's amazing what people can accomplish if they do not care who gets the credit. So if you've got wisdom, save the city. And don't worry about the credit. Matter of fact, the Lord will give you credit when he says, well done, my good and faithful servant. But you need to know. I think there are people who try to help, and then they want some kind of recognition. I'm hesitant to do that. I think they deserve it and it's proper, but Jesus said then they get their reward. And I sometimes think maybe we're stealing their reward. So serve and give, especially if you have wisdom. But just know, they may forget your name. They may forget to give you credit. Now that's one negative thing. It gets worse. Verse 16 said, then I said, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised. What? They're going to forget him and despise his wisdom. Are you kidding me? Who despises wisdom? Matter of fact, I looked at that this week and I thought, boy, who does that apply to? Maybe the Hebrew word would help me. So I looked that up and it meant contempt. That didn't help. Disdain. Who disdains wisdom? Who despises wisdom? Who has contempt for wisdom? Are you out of your mind? I thought, who does that? And then it dawned on me. The Bible's very clear about who does this. Very clear. In Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7, Solomon says, fools despise wisdom and instruction. That's the word for somebody who doesn't listen to wisdom. According to the Bible, they are a fool. And that got me started. Well, who might that be? Who are fools? Now, as you know, I went through the book of Proverbs a couple years ago, and I sent them out one at a time, and I examined each verse and tried to figure out what they were. Well, one of the times when I sent those out, I categorized them. So I have in my computer all the verses related to the sluggard, all the verses related to the parent-child relationships and all. And someday I hope to maybe do a series of sermons on some of those topics. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? At any rate, I have them all listed for fools. So I dusted off that file and I looked at it. And I came up with four kinds of fools that despise wisdom. You ready? There is the know-it-all fool. Proverbs 12:15 says, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. So there's the first kind of fool. You can't tell him anything because he knows it all. He's the know-it-all fool. Think of a 13-year-old or a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old or a 26-year-old or a 36-year-old or a 76-year-old. You know any fools like that? They come in all ages. They are proud, high-minded, self-sufficient. Their standard for determining right and wrong is their own opinion, and you cannot tell them anything because they know everything and will not listen. We tend to listen to those who tell us what we want to hear. But if we're bent on doing it our way, we won't hear anybody else. So you don't hear. You despise wisdom. Why? Because you're going to do what's right in your own eyes. That's the first fool. The second type of fool I found in the book of Proverbs is what I'm going to call the talking fool. Listen to Proverbs 10:8. The wise in heart will receive commands, but the prating fool will fall. Meaning, he's talking instead of listening. And since fools think they know everything, they don't need to receive instruction. The wise person is teachable, but a fool does not stop chatting long enough to learn anything. They have much talk and little substance. Somebody has said, because of their unwillingness to learn, loud-mouthed fools are hurled down to their ruin. Proverbs 18, verse 2 says, the fool has no delight in understanding, but is only in expressing his own heart. Talking about himself and his opinions is his highest joy, said one commentator. He refuses to listen to people with understanding. He's only interested in expressing his own heart or displaying what he knows. He does not want to gain knowledge. He only wants to share his views. Another has said, the fool has a closed mind and an open mouth. That's the talking fool. The third I found was a deceived fool. Proverbs 14, verse 8 says, "The wisdom of the prudent is to understand his ways, but the folly of fools is deception." Fools do not consider their ways, and consequently they act foolishly. And when they act foolishly, they end up deceiving themselves. You talk to a fool, and all he'll do is justify his folly. They think they are right, which is what trips them up. So there's the know-it-all fool, the talking fool, and the deceived fool. I got one more. The sinning fool. Proverbs 13, 19 says, "It is an abomination to fools to depart from evil." That's an interesting twist on the use of abomination. Rather than depart from evil, they think it's an abomination. They abhor ceasing to seek evil because they think that's what will please them. Fools mock sin. That's Proverbs 14, verse 9. The more I read in Proverbs, the more I got intrigued by this. Let me give you some other insights of Solomon about fools. Proverbs 24, verse 7 says, "Wisdom is too lofty for a fool. He does not open his mouth in the gate." And the gate means in the public square where they conducted business. But what I thought was interesting about that verse is it's beyond their grasp. They don't get it. And it's almost like they can't get it. You ever talk to anybody like that? Oh, boy. Boy, have I. Or Proverbs 17:12 says, "Let a man meet a bear robbed of his cubs rather than a fool in his folly." Now, the rage of a bear was notorious in those days. And Solomon is simply comparing encountering a fool versus a mother bear trying to protect her cubs. And one commentator said the point is this: once he gets crazy ideas in his head, nothing will stop him. The fools are less rational than a wild beast. Proverbs 23, verse 9. "Do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words." Which is an echo of exactly what Solomon is saying in Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Now, I need to clarify. When he says don't speak wisdom in the hearing of a fool, I think he means don't speak directly to him. He's not saying don't speak wisdom that's overheard by a fool. He's saying there comes a point when you cease to give some people wisdom because they despise it and they are not going to hear it. So, to quote another, "Don't try to teach a dull, stupid fool. You are wasting your time." End of quote. Trying to teach a thick-headed, stubborn fool is useless. Do not give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine. You know who said that? Jesus. Matthew chapter 27. So, don't cast your pearls before swine. There comes a time when you should not give your wisdom to somebody else. Earlier in the book of Proverbs, Solomon says there's a time to speak and there's a time to be silent. Well, I think in the first part of the passage we're looking at, the time to speak is when you've got wisdom and it can help save a city. And the time to be silent is when somebody's not going to hear you and they despise the very wisdom that you're giving them. So there comes a time when you just say nothing. And the silence is deafening. But that's what Solomon is saying. And he says it very specifically in the book of Proverbs. So, you have some wisdom, give it. But don't think they're going to make a hero out of you. They may forget you, and they may despise your wisdom. So you also need to know there's a time you don't give it. After you've given it, and it's evident that the person despises it. There is a third thing you need to know about wisdom that is of a negative sort. Pick it up at verse 18. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Now, there's a chapter break here, and I think that's unfortunate. It's possible that maybe there's a subject break here. But I think the next proverb in chapter 10, verse 1, so fits what he says in verse 18. And the idea is this. If you put a bunch of dead flies on a perfume, the flies are going to stink up the perfume. Well, to use Solomon's phrase, it's going to give off a foul odor. So a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. Wow. Here's what you need to know. I'm assuming I'm talking to wise people. Well, you need to know that you need to share your wisdom. It may help people a great deal. But you need to know you may be forgotten. And in some cases, they may despise your wisdom. But this is what else you need to know. You who have wisdom, can do something stupid. You can destroy much good by one stupid, foolish act. And that would be like piling a pile of dead flies on perfume. It'll stink up your reputation. Matter of fact, he specifically says in verse 18, it'll destroy much good, and he says, your honor. It's chapter 10, verse 1. You have honor, and just one stupid thing will destroy your honor. One sin can destroy a lifetime of virtue. Scratched my head, and I thought, who do I know that's done that? And immediately, two names came to mind. So to show you that I am bipartisan, I'm going to tell you who both of them are. Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton. Richard Nixon did some good things, actually. Not everybody would agree with everything he did. It's the case with every president. He opened China. Wasn't bad. And then somebody broke into Watergate, and apparently, as I recall, he did not order it, but he covered it up. So I just mentioned his name, and what's the first thing that pops in your head? Watergate. Bill Clinton wasn't all bad. I know everybody doesn't agree with everything he did, but he did some good things. Along with Newt Gingrich, he balanced the budget. Not many presidents could say they've done that lately. But when I mention his name, what's the first thing that pops in your head? Monica Lewinsky. That's what Solomon is saying. You can have all kinds of honor. You can have lived a life of virtue, and just one stupid act of folly will stink up your reputation. So you need to know, if you have wisdom, be careful. Be careful. One little act of folly can destroy your honor. Ouch. How are we doing? Did you learn anything today? Yeah. The wise need to know that wisdom is superior to strength. But you may be forgotten, your wisdom may be despised, and your respected wisdom and honor can be destroyed by a little folly. I want to end by talking to two people. I want to talk for just a second to those who hear wisdom. Maybe you're not wise yet. You'd like to be. Well, let me give you some suggestions. If you went back through this passage and you looked at what he says that would apply to people hearing wisdom, I think you'd come up with three things. Don't despise it. Listen to it. And remember it. The second group I want to talk to very briefly are those who have wisdom. Solomon would say, again, three things. Expect to be forgotten. Two, expect that your wisdom will be despised. And number three, be careful. Beware of a little folly. Paul says in 1 Corinthians, let him who thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. The wise can be foolish. I started out saying, I'm assuming I'm talking to wise people. Well, if you consider yourself wise, this is what you put in your pocket as you leave. Wise people can be foolish. Wise people can do stupid things. Mature people can do immature things. Wise, mature people can fall to their ruin. You don't make it until they put you 6 feet under. I thought, wow, how do I illustrate that? Then I thought of this. In Galatians chapter 6, Paul says, you which are spiritual. Now, in Paul's epistles, spiritual is a synonym for maturity. That's obvious from 1 Corinthians chapter 2. You which are spiritual, restore such a one. Restore those who've gotten off into false doctrine. Restore them. Go help them. Go use your wisdom. Then he says this, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. So do it with meekness. Wow, somebody that's qualified to help people and should can be tempted. So be careful. And then I scratched my head and I thought, well, you know, Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton, that's honor and that's in the text. But who had wisdom and did something stupid? I mean real stupid. I know anybody like that? And I scratched my head and I thought, well, of course. Who was the wisest man in the world? Solomon. Did he do anything stupid? Oh, yeah. Oh boy. How many wives? 200 and 800 concubines? Now, let me just tell you, that is plain dumb. And all the men said, amen. Years ago, I talked with a fellow who came from another country where they allowed a man to have four wives. And I was a very young man at the time. Matter of fact, I was in college at the time. But the conversation made a profound impact on me. He said, you know, you just never want to do that. I said, really? I think many men would dream of that. What do you mean you don't want to do that? He says, well, I've got an uncle and he has four wives. And he said, he bought one of them a Mercedes. Now that's fine, except the other three had to have a Mercedes. And they can't drive. And Solomon had 200 wives? By the way, that's really very serious, because according to the scriptures, that's what got him away from the Lord. So here was a man with God-given wisdom who did some really stupid stuff. So the conclusion is, take heed, when you think you stand, lest you fall. Father, thank you for the wisdom that you've given us from your word, for the Spirit of God that gives us the power to do what your word says. But Lord, we confess we've all done it. We all regret it. But Lord, may the Spirit of God have the freedom to work in our hearts and heads so that we be consistently wise. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.